This is Radio Boston. I'm Anthony Brooks. We're going to start today with our week in review, beginning with President Obama's executive action on immigration, the result, he says, of congressional inaction.
Rounding up and deporting millions of people isn't realistic. Anyone who suggests otherwise isn't being straight with you.
Local reaction to his executive order was mixed, from outright opposition.
The key is to stop sending a message about amnesty that says if you make it to the United States, you can stay.
To cautious optimism.
He's taking the first step to fix the immigration system to the extent that he can.
Plus, Harvard students push for a yes means yes sexual consent policy.
Consent is a criminal standard to talk about. It's not this unwelcomeness, which is more of a civil standard.
And Boston Mayor Marty Walsh cleans house at City Hall and prepares for possible reaction to Ferguson. Joining us now for our week in review is Shannon O'Brien, former state treasurer and a former candidate for governor. Shannon, good to have you back.
Thanks for having me.
Also with us is Jim Sturgis, executive director of the Pioneer Institute, and happy Friday to you, Jim.
Good to be with you.
So let's start off today with the big national story, but the one that has big implications for many of our neighbors in and around Boston. That was the president's move to halt the deportation of up to 5 million undocumented immigrants. Congress came close to passing comprehensive immigration reform. The Senate passed it, but it stalled in the House. And last night, the president said it's time for action and announced he's using executive authority to move this issue forward. First of all, Jim, what's your take on the president's unilateral move on this? Is this a good approach to an issue that everyone agrees is a pretty big problem that has to be resolved?
Well, you know, I think I'd put it in terms of what we expect to happen next, because I think it's all in what happens over the next few months. If the response from the Republicans is to take what happened as a stimulus to actually enact comprehensive immigration reform, then possibly he's dislodged a political debate that's been really tethered down to the ground for quite some time. I think the Republicans have a couple of different possible responses. One is a long-term one, which is legal action. And if they do that, they basically lock them in for the next 2 years into a disastrous relationship.
Legal action in response to the president's executive action.
Correct. Right. And I think you know, to some degree, the president has factored all that into his plan, which is he understands that.
Mm-hmm.
And he thinks that the Republicans won't go down that path, because I think that would probably lead to a bad outcome in the presidentials that come up.
Interesting.
Another quick one, just on the short term, what they could do is they could actually just pass bills that fund everything else except for immigration, and then put forward a funding bill for the Immigration Services Department and make what just happened illegal. And so those are kind of the steps that may happen, I think, next. And I'm really not sure what happens, to tell you the truth.
Shannon, what's your approach? Jim laid out a couple of possibilities there. What's your sort of quick reaction to what the president did?
Well, my reaction is I think it was an important step that he needed to take. I think it's important in terms of, not only for these 5 million people who are here, many who have families here, many who are working here, they're paying taxes. But I think it's very important that people understand how he approached it. And, before I did this show, I didn't see his speech. And I actually wish that every single American would go back and watch this 14-minute speech that President Obama gave. He laid out the arguments beautifully. He talked about the fact that his administration has been working very hard to make sure that criminals are not the people who are staying here, and that they actually have had an 80% increase in deporting criminals. And the fact is, what he wants to do is preserve families. He wants to help those businesses that have undocumented workers. It's an important issue for businesses. And it's also very important for, and here in Massachusetts, high-tech businesses. We have all of these college students, graduate students that are here, that are coming up with great ideas, but the fact is they can't stay here. They can't grow the economy here in Massachusetts and here in the United States. So I just thought he gave a brilliant speech last night. Unfortunately, the reaction that you heard from his opponents, I don't think gave any sort of flavor or color to what he did last night.
Well, we're not going to listen to 14 minutes of it, but let's get a taste of what the president had to say last night. Here's a cut.
Are we a nation that tolerates the hypocrisy of a system where workers who pick our fruit and make our beds never have a chance to get right with the law? Or are we a nation that gives them a chance to make amends, take responsibility, and give their kids a better future? Are we a nation that accepts the cruelty of ripping children from their parents' arms? Or are we a nation that values families and works together to keep them together?
So that's President Obama speaking last night. And reaction was immediate locally, where this could affect more than 150,000 immigrants in the state. We heard this week from Marciella Monroy, who goes to Brandeis. Her mother is undocumented and will now be able to apply for legal status. And that will allow her to visit family in Mexico without fear of being blocked from returning to the U.S. Here's what she said.
It's just going to be a really, really happy moment to reunite with family that we haven't seen for over a decade. And again, bittersweet, because everyone should have that right. And that is not the case at the moment.
Now, yesterday on this show, we also talked to Steve Cropper. He's co-chair of Massachusetts Citizens for Immigration Reform. And he said the order was a bad idea because it will only encourage more illegal immigration.
The president has authority around strong border protection, workplace enforcement, and deportation. This will be our fourth amnesty in 20 years. The key is to stop sending a message about amnesty that says if you make it to the United States, you can stay.
So, Shannon, let me come back to you on that just because you were so effusive about the president's speech. What about that argument that this is a kind of amnesty that basically rewards folks who broke the law and just keeps this cycle going?
Well, the fact is, it is not amnesty. It is making sure that you have a process for these people who are living here, who are raising their families here, who are working here, who are paying taxes. It puts in place a process where they can, as the president said, get right with the law. And it does not, it is not forward-looking. It's people who've been here for 5 years or more. And the president was very emphatic when he said one of the things that he wanted, and this is what the Republican Congress would like to defund, is border protection, greater protections on our borders to keep out illegal immigration coming across our borders and stepping up deportation. I mean, again, what people don't remember is that the president, this administration, has increased deportation of people who have committed felonies, who have committed crimes here in this country. And he was very emphatic last night saying that's not what this is about. It's making sure that we keep families together and that we provide that path for those people who are living here, that have had families here, that have been here for 5 years or more, that we create that path for them to get right with the law.
And Jim, you were talking about a couple of outcomes that might follow the president's executive order. But what do you think about this argument about sort of striking the right balance between what some people call amnesty and what other people see as trying to keep families together?
I think two basic comments. You had two quotes from individuals on opposite side of the issue. They're both right. That's one of the difficult things about this issue, right? But I would say as far as inviting more people to come to the country, just think about the economic impacts of this, some of which are really good. If you are someone who's going to be helped out through this, about probably 23 to 30% of Massachusetts illegal immigrants will be helped out through this. If you were working before as a dishwasher, you now can actually go and become a maitre d' if you work hard. And if you were working as an assembly worker, if you work hard, you might be able to become deputy foreman in a factory or something like that. So you're kind of daylighted, as the president said. You're out of the shadows. That's good. On the other side, as you do that, there's more requirements, especially when you think about farm working, construction, where a lot of the illegal workers are currently in the shadows, if you will. There's going to be plenty of opportunity that's going to open up there and probably more of an invitation. That's just an economic argument straight out. If I could just say one thing.
Sure.
Take the immigration argument out of the context of immigration and put it into this mundane area of housing in Massachusetts. Everyone always debates 40B comprehensive permits, which are unique in the sense that the state comes in and says to localities, look, we're going to trump you because you're not doing your work. That's essentially what the president is doing here. And there's a huge hue and cry around 40B. Localities don't like it. They feel like their powers are trampled upon and all the rest. The reason 40B exists is because 40A, which is the regular housing regulations, are not very good, and they prevent a lot of housing from happening. My view on immigration is this. We should raise the limits in terms of who can come to this country legally, make it much more orderly. No one thinks about the actual immigration policy that is, in fact, leading to a lot of this illegality. We should address that.
All right. Well, let's move on. We want to talk about two stories out of Harvard that caught our attention this week. The first was a push by students to get the school to institute a yes means yes consent policy to help curb sexual assaults. Now, this would require affirmative consent from both parties before engaging in a sexual relationship. Many schools already have this policy in place. It's required in California. Meanwhile, a dozen New England schools, including Harvard and Harvard Law Schools, are under federal investigation over the handling of sexual assault cases. That's the background. So we talked with Colby Bruno from the Victim Rights Law Center on Wednesday. She was skeptical about the impact of a yes means yes policy.
I don't think affirmative consent is going to make anything clearer. I think that the problems are that there are generally no witnesses to this crime, that one person says there was consent, one person says there wasn't consent. Another big problem that we're seeing with affirmative consent is what happens if both people are intoxicated? That means that both people need to get the yes. And so we're seeing a few more counter complaints or cross complaints that the perpetrator is bringing against the victim and the victim is bringing against the perpetrator.
Complicated. Shannon O'Brien, tricky issue here that colleges are trying to sort out. Do you have an opinion on what's the best way for colleges to move forward on this issue?
No, I don't have an opinion on what's the best way. And I'm sitting here going, I should be, you know, I should have an answer, but I don't. And I think Jim and I, when we heard her say, generally people are both drunk when this becomes very complicated. And this is not to make light of a very serious subject, but I hate to say it, this is where it does get complicated and where the the assent does come into play. One of the things I think that's most important, where I think everyone can agree, whether or not this affirmative assent, you know, makes a lot of sense, whether it can be enforced, how it's enforced, especially when young people and alcohol fueled whatever does take place, but education and making sure that campuses like Harvard, like Yale — this is the Yale Harvard weekend, I'd like to point out,
that's
because
right.
I went to Yale and I'm hoping that my team will win tomorrow, since we're talking about Harvard. but anyway, that there are good education policies, and that when the complaints, you know, are brought to the attention of these universities, that they're taken seriously. Because what we've seen is that many universities have not had good policies to follow through, and I think that that's probably happening less and less. But education and making sure that when serious charges are brought, that there is a path to resolving these very quickly and fairly.
Jim, I'd love to get a comment on you. I'm just wondering if trying to institute an affirmative consent is going to make a complicated problem even more complicated, as we heard from that clip. What's your view?
Yeah, my view is, look, this was in effect the reaction from the universities from prodding from the White House, where they had a task force that dealt with this. And I think the thing we know is that what we know about sexual assaults is just the tip of the iceberg. These are just the reported incidents. Mm-hmm. So I think the person that you had on tape a second ago had it absolutely right. The key issues are there are no witnesses usually. And the second thing is, once you're intoxicated, it's really hard. So what is affirmative consent? I think one thing we might want to think about is this. A lot of these actions are being taken administratively at the university level. The administration will be extremely tough or not tough and try to hide things. And there's not been consistent way of applying what might be even close to a legal standard. This is something that Alan Dershowitz and 28 Harvard folks signed.
That's right.
A statement about how they might implement this. They were looking for a lower standard for culpability. And I think probably at some point the courts are going to have to weigh in. It would be extremely helpful to have them do that, to give some real guidance that's backed by precedent of law, to help guide universities in how they might approach this.
And create a bright line so that people understand. Because I think that part of the problem is that socially, whatever, that a lot of these students do not... I do believe that there are still people who don't understand what no means and don't understand what yes means. And this is on for both young men and young women, that education needs to be there so that people do understand what this means and the ramifications of it.
All right, well, let's move on. We want to check in briefly on some moves from City Hall, where Mayor Marty Walsh has made some big moves. He fired 9 city managers in the past week, all holdovers from the Menino administration. Let me ask you both quickly about this. On the one hand, is he cleaning house, or is this sort of standard practice when a new administration begins to take over? Jim, your thoughts on this?
Well, you know, if you'd look at political giving of these individuals, it's really a mixed bag. Some people gave to Connolly, some people didn't give at all. I don't think anyone gave to the mayor. but I don't think that's the telling piece of evidence. And I appreciate there was a piece in the Globe Larry Harmon wrote where he was saying, look, these were excellent servants, public mm-hmm. servants, and they won the Shattuck Award. And why would you want to get rid of them? You know, an Italian friend once said to me, what is amazing about the American Republic is that we have uninterrupted transfers of power that are actually peaceful.
Right. No tanks in the street.
No tanks in the street. Yeah. And you know what? My thought on this is two things. Mayor Walsh is going to be held accountable for performance. So he has a right to choose the people that he wants based upon any mix of factors. The second thing is the Baker administration needs some really, really capable people, especially in the Park Service state and urban parks. And these people seem to have a lot of chops. They ought to go put their names in the hat and find work elsewhere. It's not that they have a right to work in Boston perpetually.
Hmm. Interesting. Shannon, what's your view? A necessary step for the mayor to sort of take at this point?
It's hard for me because I don't know these individuals and I don't know, you know, as much about the job they've been doing. I mean, I do know from what I read in the Globe. But I will tell you that it's important, especially when you've had a tenure as long as Tom Menino did. You have to change the tone. You have to change the culture. And that's not to say that there was a bad tone or bad culture. But at some point in time, you need to say there's a new boss in town. And sometimes these changes, even if the individuals that are being let go are really good employees. It's part of saying we're going in a new direction. We're doing something different. Because within any of these sort of microcosms, these small societies that are these governmental entities, there are different, you know, people who have different positions, different levels of power. And I think it's important for him to just say, I'm breaking the mold. I'm doing something different, even if these people have done a good job. You know, that being said, you know, it does feel like the tanks are coming through your house if you're the person who's lost your job right before Thanksgiving. And that's not an easy thing. But I do think that it's important for Marty to sort of take his, you know, to take his leadership and to make sure that he's changing this and setting the tone at the top, but also saying to everybody, you're accountable to me.
Sure.
And I think that's important. So sometimes being a little bit forceful, a little bit scary, is kind of important for him to say, we're going to be doing things differently.
I want to talk about a proposal to build a soccer stadium for the New England Revolution on a strip of city-owned land next to Route 93, roughly between the south end of Boston and south Boston proper. And this sort of relates to the new mayor. And I wanted to bring this up. Larry Harmon wrote an interesting piece in the Globe today saying that this couldn't have happened a few years ago because former Mayor Tom Menino did not get along with the Kraft family that owns the Revolution. They didn't like each other. And then he writes, but here's the rub. It's not immediately clear if there is anyone in the nascent Walsh administration with the experience to take the lead on such a complicated deal involving multiple landowners, anxious neighbors, and leery state environmental officials. Menino's development staff had the skill to deliver such a deal. Jim, it's an interesting idea. It's probably not fair to suggest the Walsh administration doesn't have the skill. It's just they don't have the record. What do you think?
I'd say the following. The fact is you would be building where there's deep interest in soccer. You wouldn't be 27 miles away of a center of a population that actually would really have a deep interest in it. And I think there is in the mayor's office, a real desire to build more dense development and more active development where people can actually participate in things in the city. He wants to be a younger place. And one of the reasons why he was letting go of some of these individuals, he's also looking at data-driven performance within City Hall. And that's a cultural shift that's pretty hard.
Yeah.
So someone who's absolutely open to development, I would not say they don't have the chops to do this. The one thing I would say is the Crafts do have the chops to do this. And in making any deal with the Crafts, the city has to make sure that it protects its own interest.
Mm.
And,
yeah,
and it should be simple. And I'm actually going to quote Stephen Lynch from a few years back, the advice that he gave Bob Kraft when he was trying to put a new football stadium in Boston. All he has to do is wait for a snowy day and get a really big shovel and dig out the space and put a chair there. And that, there you go.
He might have to put more than one chair for a soccer stadium.
You know, soccer is a smaller stadium than the football stadium he wanted. But that, I believe, was Congressman Lynch's advice to Bob Kraft back then, that, you know, he screwed up, and so now he's got that sort of plan. But you know, I do think, you know, my daughter is a soccer player, and you know, going to you know, going all the way out of the city where you do have it is far removed, and it needs a more intimate stadium, and frankly, making it more accessible to kids. Again, I'm going to do my hometown rant. I already did my Yale thing tonight. The Whitman Hansen girls are playing against my new hometown are playing against West Springfield for the Division I soccer championship, going out to Worcester. So having some of these venues for these kids, I mean, it's very, very exciting. More and more kids are playing soccer. So making that available to, you know, to families, especially closer to the city, I think would be great. But on the other hand, when my husband, who is complaining about his commute coming in every day, you know, I do think that this is going to probably be wrapped up in some of these sort of pre-Olympic discussions that John Fish and others are taking a look at, that this could be part of something that's going on, looking at a facility close to the city, but making sure that they do the traffic studies, making sure that they pay attention to those disruptive things, I think is going to be very important.
Well, whether it happens along 93, it's certainly overdue for the New England Revolution to have its own stadium rather than playing in the cavernous Patriot Stadium in Foxborough, where, you know, they have to sort of cover up half the seats even on a good, even when they almost sell out. Well, let's move on for our hubbubs, those little stories that caught the eye of our panelists, but perhaps didn't make it above the fold. Jim Sturgis, what's your hubbub this week?
Rather than the usual fluff that I serve up at hubbub time, I want to provide a substantial offering in recognition of Thanksgiving. 396 years ago today, the Mayflower Compact was signed. Plymouth Colony did not have a royal charter authorizing it to form a government. So after their arrival in Provincetown Harbor, and before their arrival in Plymouth, the 41 able-bodied separatists who made the transatlantic voyage, they signed the Mayflower Compact, which happens to be the colonies in the United States, or the first on this continent, governing document, first framework of government.
Wow, you're right.
We have much to be thankful
for. It wasn't fluff. Okay, great.
And I have nothing but fluff because I totally forgot to get a hubbub. But I'm going to tell you, this is another Thanksgiving thing. We head down to East Ham every year, right near First Encounter Beach, where the pilgrims land. I believe it's this weekend. The Turnip Festival is taking place in East Ham. So the best turnips in the state.
All right.
Celebrating the pre-holiday Thanksgiving Day. And it's where the pilgrims first landed in met the Native Americans in East Ham.
All right, hubbubs that are full of history and meaning and significance. So here's mine.
Food.
Mine's a little somber. I just want to remember Mike Nichols, who passed away, directed Working Girl, The Graduate, oversaw direction of Broadway plays, including The Odd Couple and Death of a Salesman. But before he was a director, of course, he was a comic, one I first encountered as a kid listening to my parents' records. This great show he did with Elaine May in the early 60s, Nichols and May performed comedy that was super witty, funny, sharp, way ahead of its time. So here's a little remembrance of that.
Hello, Arthur. This is your mother. Do you remember me?
Mom, I was just going to call you. Is that a funny thing? You know that I had my hand
Arthur,
on the phone.
You were supposed to call me last Friday.
Mother, honey, I know. I just didn't have a second, and I could cut my
Arthur,
throat.
I sat by that phone all day Friday.
Honey, I was working.
Day Friday night.
Darling, I was in the lab.
All day Sunday.
Mom.
And your father finally said to me, Phyllis, eat something. You'll faint. I said, no, Harry, no. I don't want my mouth to be full when my son comes.
Listening back there to Nichols and May in honor of Mike Nichols, who passed away this week at the age of 83. Jim Sturgis, Executive Director of the Pioneer Institute, thank you for coming in. Have a great weekend.
It's great to be with you.
And Shannon O'Brien, former state treasurer and a former candidate for governor. Shannon O'Brien, thank you as always.
Thank you.
Listeners, stay with us. A new center designed to offer free assistance to the hundreds of people affected by the Boston Marathon bombings. Stay with us. I'm Anthony Brooks. This is Radio Boston.